Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dearborn Open Mic relaunch. We, of course, wanted this relaunch to happen at better times where we could celebrate with you physically. But unfortunately, this pandemic is taking place and we are doing everything we can to keep our loved ones safe and sound. We hope everyone is keeping safe and staying active and busy during these difficult times. And we appreciate you tuning in for some much needed distraction. We have a wonderful show planned for you tonight, highlighting incredible artists from our community. So thank you again for joining. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Zaina. I am a performance artist, and I am also an adjunct professor and lecturer. But art has always been a huge part of my life and upbringing, but unfortunately, it never took center stage until very recently. I'm classically trained in the Western musical tradition. I sing multiple styles, including opera. I am completing my jazz album with the University of Michigan Ann Arbor, where I incorporate multiple languages into the music. I am also choir manager and member of the National Arab Orchestra Choir. I am also a vocal soloist with the orchestra. And I have collaborated with multiple artists from all walks of life, and you will find my backup vocals on tracks to be released and on some short films as well. I am also both a theater and film / TV actress. I have been in a number of short films and I am one of the lead characters of a new show about Arab Americans working for a nonprofit. The show is hilarious and it is a winner of the Creators of Culture Grant and a finalist in the very competitive Yes and Laughter Lab. So yay, very excited. So I know that being an artist can be quite challenging and this pandemic has been especially hard on those who rely primarily on gigs or bookings to showcase their art. Thankfully, a number of wonderful organizations like this one have quickly responded by allocating some of their funding to support artists with canceled gigs. So I hope that if you did have any bookings that were canceled due to the COVID crisis, that you reach out to some of these local and national organizations. If you need help in reaching out to these organizations or even just need someone to talk to during this crisis, you can feel free to reach out to me or any of the organizers, of course. Instagram is the easiest way to reach me at the moment. My account is z.nd, z-e-d-d.nd, and that's on Instagram. I don't know if some of you are having this experience, but it's an interesting thing. I feel that the less you do, the less you do. It's very curious, and I know from myself and from the other people that I have communicated with during this crisis. We all thought we could do so much with this time that we have been given, but some are finding that they are more productive when they're short on time. And much less motivated when they have all the time in the world, which totally makes sense when you think about it. I mean, the weight of the situation alone is enough to make you feel lethargic because there's an underlying global cause for our anxiety now. There's a collective sense of the unknown, and that could be really scary, and it could take a huge psychological toll on all of us, let alone our work, let alone our art. We are still in this right now. We are still going through it. Who knows what will happen when we all come out of it? What sort of psychological implications it will have on us in the future? And not all have to be negative consequences. I mean, this could totally change the way we live from now on. Maybe make us all a little more conscious and a little more compassionate and a lot more responsible citizens of this earth. I see the comment. So it surely opened our eyes to the new way of communication, how we do our work, the idea of remote careers and how meetings can take place and how business can continue and thrive. It sure changed the way artists look at venues. We always looked at venues as a physical space, a place with ticket sales and seats to fill. And now the world is your stage and your audience can watch you while they're eating their favorite chocolate from the comfort of their couch. That being said, we know human connection is still the most powerful of all. And to be honest, now we find ourselves calling our loved ones more, checking on them, taking care of them. And I hope we never lose that ever again. All the souls that continue to be lost during this pandemic, nothing could have prepared us for these losses. But I think we will all now reflect on how to do better in the future. We will persevere, just as art perseveres, as people now more than ever realize how important art is as a propeller of life and civilization. Art comes in all shapes and forms, and sometimes a global trauma like the one we are currently experiencing can trigger a strong artistic reaction that results in some of the most splendid works of art that are birthed out of strife. And that is okay. Some of the most powerful works of literature are a direct result of trauma, whether collective trauma or personal trauma. Some of the most valued paintings are born out of sadness. And some of the most profound poetry is written out of darkness. Art in the time of trauma is that little sliver of hope that shines at the end of a dark tunnel. Artistic expression can be both therapeutic and cathartic, providing psychological relief through the open expression of strong emotions. So for all the artists out there who have found an outlet for their worries and their art, thank you. For through you, we continue to find hope in places when there was none. For others, global trauma results in a feeling of helplessness, and some artists can find themselves unable to produce any works due to the daunting nature of the situation, and that is also okay. What is important is that you use your outlet, whatever it may be, to keep you leveled and keep your mind and your mental and spiritual health strong enough to carry you and your loved ones through this. Being an artist myself, I find myself in the latter part of the group, actually, a little unable to express myself to others out of fear mostly. So I am using this time to work on myself as a person, going back to the basics, taking care of my mental health, meditating, exercising, catching up on my reading, and relearning some of the things that I have neglected that made me, like language training and music. But I won't lie to you. On most days, I want to do absolutely nothing but watch whatever is on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon or whatever it is. And that is also okay. I want you to know that. But thankfully, the wonderful artists that are participating in the show tonight have been so gracious as to continue to provide us with their inspiring works. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce our visual artist of the night, Nada Hassan. Nada is a Lebanese-American artist based in Detroit, Michigan. She carries a bachelor's degree in fine arts, majoring in graphic design. After years of practice and experimenting with different media, Nada has developed a minimalist style in illustration that is simple yet meaningful. With a few lines, she illustrates her journey and dreams, inspired by motherhood and the ups and downs of parenthood. Nada pours her heart and emotions into her drawings to share the sweet moments and struggles of every parent. With the COVID-19 quarantine, Nada has been cooking, disinfecting, and drawing more. Inspired by the quarantine and the changes around the world in the past few months, a new character is born in her illustrations that she will share more about today. I'm so excited to see the new character for the big unveiling. You can follow Nada at nadahassan.com, nadahassan.com, or Instagram at _nadahassan, nadahassan. Take it away.
Hi, thank you, Zena, for the introduction. It's good to be back. It's good to have Dearborn Open Mic back, although that was not the plan. We did not expect this to happen and be quarantined at home for God knows how long. But it's good to be back, and it's good to have all these artists participate today. I'm so excited to hear everybody. So we are all in this together, and it is unexpected. It happened unexpectedly. We're trying to be as productive as we can. Some of us are laid off. Some of us are working from home. Some of us are stay-at-home moms or dads, and we're all trying to adapt in different ways. And at the beginning, before the lockdown, we were all going a little, there was paranoia. We were going crazy and not knowing what is going on, if we're going to get the virus or not, and how to clean and disinfect things, how to keep ourselves healthy and safe. So I came up with, I started drawing. So I was working less, so I was staying home more and trying to keep my sanity. I started drawing and I was inspired by the COVID-19. And I'm not sure if you can see my screen. I'd like to share some of these illustrations. So we started simply by, all you need to do is washing your hands, and that should keep you safe. And then when most businesses started shutting off or closing down due to lack of business and for safety of the workers, I had this vision in my mind that when I sit home, I'm going to be reading and relaxing and listening to music and do all the things that I wanted to do and watch all the movies that I wanted and everything on my to-do list and enjoy my house. So that was the expectations, which you can see here. But the reality was, with sitting home comes more cooking and cleaning and taking care of a house, which turned out to be this. Maybe that is me. Call that a self-portrait. That is not the character that I mentioned, by the way, that you mentioned in the introduction. This is just a little sketch that I did of the expectations and reality. So the reality ended up being me staying home is more work and more disinfecting and being more paranoid of, did I wash my hands properly? Did I clean all the groceries properly? Am I keeping everyone in the house safe? So there are a lot of these coming. I plan on drawing more of these expectations versus reality. I think they're just funny and reflect most of us. Most of us had expectations, and the reality that we see, that we face, was different. And then this is the guy. This is Corona guy. This guy is, I mean, I guess this speaks for itself. He is going crazy. He's at home in this box, trying to stay safe, and just lunatically spraying, I guess if you zoom in, you can see this would say coronavirus killer. Just spraying everything, disinfecting everything, staying on his phone, re-watching the news, watching the cases go up, the number of deaths going up. We're all trying to stay safe and healthy. So the best thing to do is stay home. Stay home, but we also could not help watching the news and staying updated. And it was when the coronavirus started in December in China, we were watching over in the news and we were just waiting for it to come to Michigan. So we were like not anticipated. We were just paranoid and waiting for it to come. We knew it was coming. So I guess this Corona guy reflects everybody's experience at first when we knew that it's coming, when we knew how bad it is, and just going crazy, the paranoia, I guess, it's reflected in these scribbly character. And Corona guy goes through a lot during the pandemic. Just watching the news all the time with a disinfectant next to him. I think most of us were in this phase at the beginning until we started to realize that we can use our time better than that. And here's another expectations versus reality of Corona guy. On the right side, on the left side, you can see the expectations of him staying home, working out every day, which, you know, most of us planned on doing, including me. But that never happened. You can see on the right side the reality of sitting home, eating all the food because you have the time to cook and eat and gain a few little pounds. Here's just another example of everything that goes on through his mind and just the craziness of it and not knowing what to do. This one, it's not about the Corona guy, which there's more coming. I haven't published them, but there's more coming. This is when they first closed the parks. Where I live, there's a park across the street. And I was sitting in the morning having my coffee, and I saw the city of Dearborn truck stop, and two guys went down and wrapped the park with a caution yellow tape. And it felt unreal. It felt that life is really stopping. I know it's been really hard and bad for people who have been suffering from actually getting sick from the virus and people dying, and it's very unfortunate. But we're trying to be persistent and move on with our lives and do the best that we can while living, staying home. But just seeing the park being closed, it was a little surreal knowing that the kids will not enjoy the summer this year, that a lot will not happen this year. Graduations won't happen. Weddings won't happen. Funerals won't happen. Life has literally been on hold for who knows how long. So it felt ghostly, and I think that's what I tried to reflect in this drawing. So this is what I have today for COVID-19. I just like to mention that I do draw other things. I used to draw other things. I'm really inspired by the 50s fashion, which I love. I absolutely love. And you can follow me on nadahassan.com to see more of my drawings and more of the Corona guy illustrations coming up. So I hope everybody stays home and be safe. And what I can say is create whatever you've been wanting, you've been putting on hold to do your whole life. Now is the time, now that we're staying home. Now is the time to do it. Whether you wanted to write that book or read that book or draw or paint or sing or dance, now is the time. Now we're staying home. We have the time to do it all. And it's time to be productive. Do everything that we can to make good use of this time. And it's funny, I saw the other day an article about how Isaac Newton discovered, or you know, during a pandemic, during his time, he discovered the gravity. That's when he was doing his studies and all that. He was sitting home and making use of it. Now is the time to do everything that you wanted to do. But I hope everyone is staying safe and healthy and enjoying this show. Thank you.
Thank you, Nada, so much. And I have to say, I identify a lot with Corona guy.
Right.
I mean, like you said, at the beginning, he had all these goals and whatever. And then it's like, no, like, yeah, I'm going to work out every day. But then, of course, you put on the first 5 pounds and then the next 5 pounds. And then you're like,
that's when you discover that you can cook and bake better than your mom, maybe, and start eating more, actually.
Yeah, exactly. We're all going to come out of this. If anything, if nothing else, we're all going to come out of this brilliant chef.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have never cooked so much in my entire life.
Yeah, so did I. I'm actually enjoying it.
Yeah, but I must say, Nada, I love how much with like such minimalist approach you say so much. It's really such a wonderful gift and ability.
Thank
that
you.
Outlines this rare type of like visual art expressionism. I'm a huge fan of your work, so
thank you
so much for sharing it with us tonight. Can you tell us a little bit more about the style, how you came upon it, and why you chose this really minimalist approach?
I mean, I've been drawing since I was a little kid. I've always remember going out and having a pencil and a paper with me. And I've always been drawing and coloring. And I started graphic design, but what I wanted to do is study illustration. But I thought I'd have a better chance of having a better career if I did something that I can actually find a job at. So the closest thing was graphic design. But still during my, I do work as a graphic designer, but during my free time, I've been experimenting a lot with my drawings and trying to find my style. That was not an easy thing to find your style that distinguishes you from other artists, or just your way of doing something that when you see a piece, you recognize it right away. You could say that's a Picasso because he has a unique style. I'm not comparing myself to him, of course, but I've just,
But you do have a very unique style. Like, it's not every day that we see that style.
Yeah, so it took a lot of experimenting, and it started with this series about motherhood, inspired by my motherhood journey. I have now he's 7 years old. I have a 7-year-old son, but he was my inspiration and motivation to come up with something original, something to start my illustration journey with. And I started drawing these from my everyday life with a baby, from pregnancy to delivering, the experiences and the simple things that we go through every day, from taking a shower and getting the whole bathroom wet, to breastfeeding, to pregnancy, to the first birthday, moving with a baby. I mean, the style itself just came from practice, I would say. And I guess that has been my style ever since I started drawing. But just it took me time to figure out how I want to apply it. So just practice, experimenting, researching, looking at other artists. I was inspired by a lot of other artists with that style. And that's how I got there. And it's a journey. It goes on. It never ends. I'm still trying to make it better, to come up with new things and add more to the series.
Absolutely. We're always evolving and experimenting, trying new things and growing from that. And I can't help but feel like your style and your drawings are perfect for like a whole like Hallmark campaign where like you can make like Mother's Day cards. I think they'd be so cute. So you guys, next time you want like a perfect Mother's Day gift, contact Nada for one of her artworks.
Absolutely. You can go on my website too. I'm in the process of redesigning my website, but it's up and running, nadahassan.com, and I'll have a shop on there too where you can shop for gifts like that.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Nada, for sharing your wonderful gift.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So next we have a very special poetry reading by Yusuf Al-Qamousi. Yusuf has authored collections of poetry, memoirs, short stories, and essays, including the books Poems in 2019, Chapter 1, Costa Rica, and The Massacre of Heartbreak Morrow. His latest work, entitled Apocalypse, is a series of poems published in real time, which explores the psycho-emotional trauma of the 2020 coronavirus pandemic. Yusuf holds a Master of Education in ESL and teaches secondary English and history at Henry Ford Early College in Dearborn. You can view and follow Yusuf's work on his website, Things I Write, at alqamousi.com. Tonight, though, Yusuf has a very special performance. He will be performing an excerpt from his latest poetry collection, Apocalypse, from the chapter Somewhere in April. Enjoy.
They say there was a life before these days, a world beyond the prisms of our porch. A time before green sickness perched above our doors, before the pasty smog of death would hourly muzzle against our window panes. They say these streets these hollowed, marrowed slabs with cinder night and day, with fumes that choke and cough, combusting. Faces twined, inflamed, and sinister would rattle at the wheel and stew about to end important things. They say these towns and storefronts once had doors that opened, beckoned, beamed with sweet salute, and food and drink was brought before the guests and passed around and offered, shared and thanked. And greeters traded joy by mouth and hand, and shoulders brushed, and hips and lips and cheeks, and bad boys buzzed about the budding girls, and old men laughed, and bitterness was sweet. And in the night, as storefronts closed their doors, and mobs and misfits all came out to play, to hurl their smites and strokes upon their day, as sorcerers and wizards of the sound would cast electric fire from the mound, while horns and strings and buttons shook the ground, and from the dais stirred their holy ghosts, and summoned love and peace and jungle tides. I've heard it said that back in the marsh of time, the children swung from colored metal bars and gathered on the grass beneath the sky to kick and shout and ride and swing and sigh. Those children, now in exile from their homes of desks and chairs and books and candid words, must press their hearts and minds against a screen. But back in ancient times, they ran amok and played their parts so well, complained, rebelled. And we, Karavas, masters, enemies in mask and garb, commenced to stave their taunts with dates and deadlines, essays, quizzes, tests, our temples, dojos, classrooms, now for sale, the price of life, a cost too great to bear. Today, a tang is brimming from the pipes, anemic veins like winding vines serpentine about the chest and heel, the tentacles of the murk of dusk silhouetted in an evening flush. Stay home, but how, when home is work and school, the park, the bench, the beach, the guest, the shop, the club, the gym, the diner, the lounge, the books, the passenger seat, the one-night cheap hotel. Home, my pet, is your mouth, your skin, your grip, your drip, your nip, your clap. Home is the tug of loathsome lovers. Home, the thrash of a worthy foe, the flappy shake of Amwa's hand. Home is hope at the base of a can of paint. And rising, reeling, reeking from the marsh, the stench of rot, the wailing walls and lots, a funereal muff, a thrashing strangulation, the seams of houses taut, distended, the buckling bricks, the corners creaking joints, the crackling floorboards, the splintering glass, hissing chimneys, the gullet prepared to spout. Houses, the bigger, the emptier. Lawns, the larger, the farther away from dawn. Walk like mad, walk like hell, walk the streets, the miles, the blocks. Walk away despair and fear and hate. Stop not that ye be not stopped. The night is much too long. Let there be light. Let there be dawn. Let there be room and air and sex and smut. Give me a chug. How much more life can I suck from the end of this crinkled straw?
Yusuf, thank you so much. That was absolutely beautiful and chilling. Thank you for the powerful message and the performance. I know this particular work was inspired by the COVID crisis, and it's absolutely beautiful and very, very powerful and surreal. But is it okay if we ask you to tell us more about your general influences on your background with writing and poetry, your inspirations and experiences and what led you to this point.
Yeah, sure. Do you want me to speak in general, or is there a particular question?
Sure, in general, your background with poetry.
Yeah, I've been writing for a long time. I've always been interested in I guess poetry has always been a part of my life. From very young, I was trained in Quran, recitation of Quran. It's probably the first thing I ever learned and read. And I think it's laced throughout all of my writing. I think it's become a very personal part. Teenage years, gangster rap was a big part of my life. Tupac, Biggie, Nas, I think they're also in there. And then Shakespeare, of course, is probably one of my biggest influences. I didn't get into Shakespeare until high school. But since then, I've been captivated, and it's someone I always go back to. Music also plays a big role. I mentioned gangster rap, but also jazz and some rock, in particular The Doors, the American rock band. And after that, pretty much everything we read and everything we experience and listen to and in general experience translates into all of our art. So everything else in between, I guess, is in there somewhere.
Yeah, that makes sense. I feel like every time you read a book or read a poem or even listen to a song, you pick up something and it becomes a part of you. It molds the future you. And yeah. It's a wonderful experience. So I know we have been sharing on the broadcast where people could find us or find your art, but where do you showcase? Can you share with everyone where to find more of your work? I know you have a few works published. Can you share a little bit more about that and how we can find you and continue to see your performances?
Sure. Yeah. So I've been posting Apocalypse. What I share today is an excerpt from what started as an Apocalypse diary. But then it all fell apart because I lost track of time and lost track of self, pretty much. So those are all available in real time on elkamusi.com. If you go there, they all also have audio. So there's the audio and then the reading. And if you go on there, you know, you click under prose and you'll see me there. I also have been keeping an audiobook of the entire Apocalypse Diary, also shared in real time, and that's on YouTube. I have several channels. One of them is an education channel that has some resources that I use in my classroom for teachers. But there's another account that has the entire book on audiobook. So if you don't want to go in and click and read on the website, you can just play it on YouTube and it'll play straight through. My books are available in several places. Probably the easiest place to find them is Amazon.com, if you type in my last name. Currently on Amazon, there are three books, one called The Massacre of Heartbreak Morrow, Chapter One, Costa Rica, which was published in 2017, and then my latest collection of poetry, which was also published last year, 2019. If you look there, you might notice that the style looks familiar. I'm very fortunate and grateful that Nada Hassan, who just appeared before me, is the contributor to the graphic design. So I'm a tremendous fan of her work. She's a fan of mine, and I'm very, very grateful that we can collaborate.
That's amazing. I didn't even know that she did your illustrations. That's really cool. I love that our artists collaborate together. That's wonderful. We have so much talent in this community. And this is why programming like this is super important, because you never know, your next door neighbor might be the new, like, you know, author of the year. We have amazing, amazing talent, and venues like these are very, very much so needed. And the Dearborn community, of course, we all have this common experience of coming from an Arab background, and we all know what that means to an Arab family. So I feel like we have a shared sense of responsibility and a shared sense of guilt that carries us through our work, whatever, you know, venue it might be, writing, poetry, performance, dance, you know, music. So it's really, really wonderful that we have a space like this one to share and to realize that the great treasures and the great talents we have in this community. And you are certainly one of these treasures. And I thank this program for introducing me to you, because your work is absolutely phenomenal. Honestly, it's wonderful.
Thank you, Zena. Thank you.
Very wonderful. So thank you so much.
Pleasure to meet
you. We really appreciate you. Okay, well, now we're going to move on to even more amazing performances and more amazing poetry, and we are carrying on through the night. So I hope if you're just joining, we just had phenomenal visual artist Nada Hassan and the spectacular performance by Yusuf Al-Khamousi. I encourage you to visit their websites to learn more about them. Of course, you're going to see the scroll telling you where to find them. So moving on, we next up is poet Ali Al-Arisi. He's a Detroit-based poet and educator who is a student of life. And that is all I will say about him. So, Ali Al-Arisi, take it away.
Wow. Okay, so good to be back. Hello, everyone. My name is Ali Al-Arisi. Like Zaina said, I'm an educator by day. Of course, we are in a time where isolation is kind of taking over. So, there's a few words that I have to say. For a person with a fast-paced lifestyle, I mean, wake up at 6, sleep late at night, and when it moves so fast, you're not able to see anything that passes by until you actually stop. So right now is the time of stop. And I kind of wrote this today, and I was like, I think the silence, the most important component in this quiet, as someone who is always around sound, who is immersed in sound, I found quiet ethereal. I find quiet as the place I need to visit more often to be better. So for tonight, I don't really have much to say about the isolation, but I wrote two pieces in this time, and I think as a person that moves so fast, sometimes these things that we are distracted by, or we force ourselves to be distracted by, are the things that take us away from our mental. And huge advocate of mental health, and I think right now, when it comes down to it, a lot of people are feeling like they're not able to move. They're not able to really like breathe sometimes, right? I have a few friends that always contact me. It's like, what do I do? And it's not about what you do. It's about how you do it, right? So with that being said, the first poem I wrote in my graduate program a couple weeks back, never really write about political stuff or really identity when it comes to a space as a country. I write identity more of the things that happen in the mind, and when it comes to mental health, that's pretty much what you identify with most. But this one's called My Skin Became an Admission Ticket. In 2014, I traveled to a place I haven't been to, a place I'm associated with, a place I treat as a person I have not met before, but I know so well. I cannot help but how I feel about you, how I feel about me. My experience with you is an unfortunate one. Turbulence. Followed by turbulence, a voice in a language of static turbulence with a seizure. Indigo skin lacking of sustenance, laughter to crying to stillness. Suspended in the air in the stomach of steel captive without a sense of freedom, I landed on the surface that kissed the sun frequently. A scorching mineral full of sin is forgiven. I landed in the homeland, a land of milk and honey full of gold and blue gates with creatures of myth, a voice like my mother's. Ya ibni lishma tadhak, ya ibni adluj min ashufak, my darling son. A voice my mother's conflicted. I hate myself for making her feel that way. I hate having her question why I'm in a place I am in. I lived surrounded by heat and sweat, by sweat and cat corpses on the ground besides sustenance. My body deprived of love, of a commitment to well-being. My skin finally turns a shade of olive oil and sand. My bones protrude lifeless. I look the way I was always meant to look like. The only time I accepted my skin, it becomes my admission ticket. Shrines that make me feel religious without being religious. Shrines that make you feel included when you have never felt part of anything before, not people or a familiar place. I am not religious. My skin became an admission ticket. Terrorists look like you. Terrorists look like me. Terrorists look like olive oil and sand. And how unfortunate it is to be the complexion of your land when it is looked down upon by the home that you've always lived in. My skin became an admission ticket. Only I wanted to be admitted into something I have never been thought of, never thought about, never had relations, connected only by the surface of dermis and the touch of skin. My skin became an admission ticket. To the culture I shared with another culture, I still feel like I lack the experience to deal with it properly, a culture I can never be content with. My skin became an admission ticket. only I never wanted to be admitted. So that was, my skin became an admission ticket. It comes from a place where isolation is something, again, it comes back to it. In my first book that I published in 2017, Safe, I talked a little about isolation, a little about how an exchange between two people can have you feeling afterwards when that exchange is no longer there. And then in 2018, Oceans, Tears, and Realization was published. And when it came to isolation, again, it has never been a topic. I talk about it often and frequently. I just never imagined it would be in the form of this, this like frozen thing that usually you're able to walk away from it when it's in front of you, but now you're kind of just sitting with it. So the next thing is, next poem actually is, it's called I Took a Break. So I took a break last weekend. I thought about it, actually I planned it. It took me 92 days of contemplation where I spent the last 15 minutes of every day before the day's end on how I'm going to sleep in, where 5 a.m. is not my only option. I took this break hoping to relieve my mind of the vastness of deep whatever capacity I believe it is in. I took a break from the conscious decisions and the incessant illusion that I am going to rest my heavy eyes I have in my sockets, like waterfalls, frozen, perfect glacial sparkling pillars that hold the might of what keeps going like waterfalls frozen. I took a break from the constant realization that nothing is the same from the time I realized the place and time of when it happened last time. Except I cannot tell you about the time before. I took a break from the empty bodies that wander this world and create for themselves limiting discretion, caution, I cannot be around you. A break from people bringing up religion. In a conversation and imposing what they heard instead of what they researched, trying to explain that my thought process will make me the gatekeeper of hell. 92 days ago, I told myself I would rest. I would stay awake later just so I can sleep in. I want to sleep in. In fact, I stay awake and count the thoughts and ideas instead of sheep. A void that could be written down, except my fingers are only 10 and two hands are not enough to make sense of it all. I took a break last weekend. I contemplated it. I thought about what I would do first when I would wake up at 5 a.m. I would get up and treat my day as if life has no indication, as if time has no ability to influence how long I would wait for the coffee that would take 2 minutes to brew after I take 30 seconds to grind the coffee beans. I took a break last weekend. It made me wonder how much time I would take for me to forget that the last weekend before I have to be in the same routine is undeniable. I took a break last weekend 92 days ago. I planned for this, except I am no longer accepting this break that I had to plan 92 days ago just so I can wake up on the different side of the bed. I took a break last weekend. I thought about it and it took that weekend to make me feel your lack of presence and how no matter how much time I could resist, I'm afraid of the silence that haunts my progress. So that was a good break. So I think the last thing I want to say before I kind of get out of there, right? Get out of here, is that I've been teaching for about, it's almost 3 years now. And I think being away from students and being away from not just my students in the school setting, but being away from my students in the prison. I've been teaching at the prison for almost a year now, and it's twice a month. And I've been with these women twice a month for the past, for almost a year, and not to be able to see them. And this was the only outlet that they had. These two Sundays in the month are the outlets that they had in order for them to kind of express, to let go, to let loose, and to kind of put it out there. And in this isolation, you can't help but to think about all the people that you surround yourself with. And right now, in my mind, I think about my family, absolutely. I think about my friends, absolutely. I think about anybody I came in contact with, absolutely. But my mind goes to the people that used certain outlets to get things out there that are not able to do that. So again, it comes back to isolation, it comes back to silence, and I hope that somehow, somewhere, let it out. Let it out in any way, in any form that you can, and expect it and accept it. And that's all I got. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ali. Seriously, I must say your energy is always so wonderful and your spirit is always so generous and you're always so forthcoming, you know, with it all. I love your work and how personal it always is and how you your main themes are always involved with mental health, which is an extremely important issue. Again, one of those issues that aren't really discussed in our culture that needs to be destigmatized and talked about more often. So thank you for Absolutely. Having the courage to express that. How does one gain that courage to take a vulnerable piece of themselves and share such intimacy with the world, Ali? Like, how do you get to a place that allows you to do that?
So that's a really good question. I think it started with people saying, well, people in our culture, of course, saying that you're a man and there's no such thing as emotions, right? There's no such thing as feelings. There's no such thing as being able to really express yourself that is below the surface, right? So again, and I bring this kind of picture to anybody that asks me this question is like, think of just skin layers, right? The first skin could be, you know, it could be punctured, it could be soaked with sun, whatever. But if you get deeper and deeper, that's where it really hurts and that's how long it is to heal, right? So I just say, like, F it, just talk about it. Who cares? If somebody listens, somebody listens. If they don't listen, it's okay. It's their problem and they're gonna deal with it. And it's probably gonna come in some form where it comes in their legacy, right? It's gonna be a daughter or a son that comes out and says, hey, I'm feeling some kind of way. And that's pretty much it.
Right, you're right. You at the end of the day, you have to be comfortable living in the uncomfortable space, Absolutely. Right? You have to get there in order to find peace. You have to be uncomfortable for a while to create your own path, to carve your own little line against the grain sometimes, especially in a difficult culture, of course. Yes. Ali, where can we find more of your work?
Just like Yusuf said, the easiest way to get my books are on Amazon. If you type in my name or last name, and you get to see some of my videos on YouTube, NPR, and Instagram is usually where I kind of update. The quickest way to kind of see what's going on is Instagram. So, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much once again.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, we are continuing with the beautiful poetry. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce Michael Fawaz. Michael is a Lebanese-American poet and spoken word artist and one of the most well-read people I know. His poetry reflects the constant question of identity, the purgatory space between the East and the West that are forever pulling at his roots, and the growth and the torment of a poet in exile. He has the very rare ability to turn feelings into eloquent words in a texture just like molasses. You can follow Michael at coffeeshop_hero on Instagram, coffeeshop, coffeeshop_hero, there you go, on Instagram, or at Fawaziyat, FawaziYyat on Twitter. So here is Michael with Qasidas in Quarantine.
Salam, how's everybody doing tonight? I hope everybody's well and safe. Before I start, I would like to go back around and give a big shout to both of the poets that came before me. Yusuf, that was my first experience hearing your work. And I'm gonna say the labyrinths that you took me to in your very descriptive prose, which felt to me as prose, out of this world, fantastic. And Ali, for you, the anaphora, the repetition that you use to frame those poems, that I find is something that's consistent in your work, is enviable. Beautiful writing and great job, guys. So tonight, not gonna do any poems that I've really worked on or am presenting anywhere for publishing or anything like that. I just want to talk about this quarantine and some of the sort of journals or jotting downs, the qasidas that I have written during this time, this crisis of ours that we're all wrapped up in. I will go back to sort of where Ali started. And when he spoke of silence, he said something. He said, silence is ethereal. And he framed a poem, I believe, in that context. I also would like to speak on the theme of silence. There's a writer, his name is Maeterlinck. His name was, he's a very old writer. And he has a line where he says this. He says, "We don't know each other yet. We have not yet dared to be silent together." I want to let that just ruminate a bit. We don't know each other yet. We have not yet dared to be silent together. Now, for us in this situation, most of our lives are very busy. We may have full-time jobs. We probably have kids or families or people that we take care of. We're constantly driving in our cars, moving around a lot. I personally live in the city. So it's very busy. It's loud. I work a lot. I deal with a lot of people. I take a lot of phone calls. I do a lot of emails. So this writing is my silence in a way. It's where I go to find the ethereal, as Ali said. So I want to think about how all of that, for many, 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 many people, maybe you, has come to a halt. And maybe for the first time in some years, abruptly, perhaps unwelcomely, perhaps disarmingly, you are being silent with yourself. And for a writer, for a poet, that's a thing that we do. I know we're weird. We like to sit there and think about things and deconstruct them and figure them out and put them on a page and actually confront our feelings. And so I wonder how many of you have had to do the same in this time. Just going to put that out there. I'll start with, so forgive me if there's recurring themes in this poetry. It's often I write it in the morning as I walk out of my buildings because I am still working, although just half as much as I was before. So I am experiencing downtown Detroit, the city, in this very sort of a twilight zone time where nobody is outside, where it's very eerie and dystopian. So I'll start with a couple here and we'll continue the conversation throughout, hopefully. And again, forgive me if there's any recurrent themes between that are overlapping between the poems, but this is my experience, which is very similar every day, but still draws from me new insights and expressions. Silent city, the hustle and bustle of birdsong, the dripping sound of sunrise, hum and drum of the emptiness, light casts shadow. Buildings hunched like ancient trees. I and another man cross the street. Distance, implicit between two masks, four gloves, but how many dreams, how many creeds, how many interpretations exist in the space between men? How many rites, how many religions? I say, as many as there are humans. So I'll move on to another one. I hope that framed for you something that you're also experiencing at this time. A little prose I jotted down. It's one thing about life in the city, come to a halt. A symphony of church bells I had never heard before. Pleasant and lonely, accompany me in the street. And everywhere there is fog now, for every scarce person. And everywhere there is fog now, and everywhere there is fog, no matter what the weather be. For every scarce person is sudden mysterious. It's sort of this distance that we are creating between ourselves, this space which we have been told we need, this social distancing, this 6 feet. I'm sure you guys have all been to the grocery stores. It's crazy. You got those like stickers on the ground keeping you away from each other, social distancing, there's signs, and everybody's wearing masks. It's quite a quite a time to be alive, especially if you're right. Another one. Sunrise crowns the buildings. Blue sky empty as all these streets. The chattering of birds. The marble men in their silence. A sleeping city couldn't dream this. Yet all mankind was never awake. Humans now like bees. Stuck inside our honey pods. Hexagons tormented by life. Still in the window. A trumpeting of spring. Okay, last one. I love you guys. Thank you for giving me the space and the spot to put these out here. Moon set in sky, the eye of a bird on its azure face. Fog blankets life. Humans perched in concrete trees. The intoxication of the sequential. Days in slumber, the thousand dreams. Sparsely we move, no one left to resist morning. Behind me, sun is rising, a phoenix just light. And I'll leave it there. Bye.
Thank you so much, Michael, for sharing this with us. And I must say, I love the theme of silence, especially during this increasingly silent time. The silence is deafening, you might say. So as a city dweller, how do you find your silence? How do you find your peace? I know you live in downtown Detroit. Right now, it's very chillingly quiet, but otherwise, how do you find that space for yourself?
For me, I find it still in mornings, just in the early sort of quiet. Although it's remained rather quiet relatively throughout the rest of the day, it's mornings, it's reading, it's writing, it's making my coffee, you know, just the small pleasures of living a life that's slowed down. So I've been doing a lot of reading, a lot of exploring of different genres that I wanted to explore for so long, but that I felt constrained on. And really just being thankful, you know, for the blessings and the love that I have in this existence, and that I'm very much blessed to have, and recognizing that life is fleeting, that we're all getting older, we ain't getting younger. Every day we live is a step closer to the door of death. So, now with this whole coronavirus, it's closer and closer and closer, and it's much more relative. And I think this slowdown, hopefully, will be a collective sort of conscious awakening, in that we can all sort of glean from this a way of life which perhaps doesn't have to be so fast and so fleeting and so quick to forget. maybe we'll actually remember something this time.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. And I know your beautiful mind works at its pace, and you take your, you really, really take your care and your time to really sculpt what you want to put out there. But we all know from our friends and our bigger circle even that people are really, really yearning to have in their hands a book by you. So what can you tell us a little bit more about where people can find you, continue to get these little drops of your beautiful, brilliant mind, and what other things are you working on?
Notebook currently is in progress, but Instagram and Twitter is where you can find my work and my thoughts and all of the things that I like to share and the artworks of other people that I love and look up to. And I just like to try to curate a space. Right now I'm taking it slow. I've thrown my manuscript completely out, so perhaps I'll start a new one. But I would like to circle back to MetaLink, who I started with, and try to read something very beautiful for you guys so that I can leave you with some pure beauty as it relates to silence. He says in his book, The Treasure of the Humble, which, by the way, greatly influenced a very young Khalil Gibran, he says, "There is no silence more docile than the silence of love. And it is indeed the only one that we may claim for ourselves alone. The other great silences, those of death, grief, or destiny, do not belong to us. They come towards us at their own hour, following in the track of events, and those whom they do not meet need not reproach themselves. But we can all go forth to meet the silences of love. They lie in wait for us, night and day, at our threshold, and are no less bountiful than their brothers. And it is thanks to them that those who have seldom wept may know the life of the soul almost as intimately as those to whom much grief has come. And therefore, it is that such of us as have loved deeply have learnt many secrets that are unknown to others. For thousands and thousands of things quiver in silence on the lips of true friendship and love that are not to be found in the silence of other lips, to which friendship and love are unknown."
Well, thank you, Michael. We really, really appreciate the beautiful color you add to this world, especially during these times. So thank you again. So we will continue on to Wissam Sharafeddin. Wissam is a businessman, entrepreneur, and writer, and most importantly, founder of the Dearborn Open Mic, both English and Arabic. So if it wasn't for Wissam, we wouldn't have the space to share with you these wonderful, wonderful artists. So he works tirelessly to bring programming to our community. He's one of these dynamic people who I don't know how he does everything that he does. So we look forward to hearing from Wissam. You're up.
Hello, Zaina. Thank you. And hello, everyone. Thank you for beautiful emceeing of this program.
Trying.
It's such a great opportunity to really come back to Dearborn Open Mic and to restart it. First, I want to say for Yusuf Al-Qamousi, if you haven't visited alqamousi.com, if you haven't seen the work of Yusuf Al-Qamousi, currently Yusuf is a person who has been since his childhood been writing and indulging in the English language in depths that are only for geniuses in this language. And the latest work he has been done, The Apocalypse Diary, is really opening a new genre in English literature, absolutely creating a new face in the English literature that you ought to, if you love literature, you ought to follow him and follow his performances. Ali, your poetry is an amazing, Ali Al-Aridi, amazing orchestra of all the screams of feelings, with all the rants of the soul, with all the words of the mind, all the thoughts. If you put words on these thoughts and just mix them with feelings and mix them with the deep existential desires and fears of the soul, it comes up to be your poetry. So this is very powerful, and I love hearing you. So thank you for participating and sharing with us tonight. And Michael, your poetry is so beautiful and calm and crisp. I feel like walking on the streets of Paris when I hear your poetry. So thank you for sharing with us. Today I'm sharing one poem with you from a new book that I'm almost done thanks to the coronavirus. It's going to be called The Climbing Leaves, and it will be published very, very soon. I'm putting the final touches on it. And thanks, Yusuf, for proofreading it. Something special about I did in this book is you know how sometimes we experience certain places or music that influences the way we feel and the way we express ourselves and influences the poem. So I tried to integrate this in this book by using photographs that are very closely associated with each poem to put the reader in a mood that is very close to the poem. But I also did something new, which is I actually incorporated the music. So for certain poems that there are music that was playing during my inspiration to write it, I included that music, and I included like a QR code. If you point your camera at it in the book, it will play, and then you can play the same music while you're reading the poem. So I hope that that engagement of media will enhance the feeling of the book. This poem is called Unfinished, and it is written on the tune of Mampo Kanki and Six, played by Michelangeli, one of my favorite classical piano performers. So I will be playing that music while reading the poem. The poem is basically about a moment of my life where I sat down and looked around me, and everything I saw felt that is unfinished. And then the feelings inside of me, the thoughts inside my head, everything seemed unfinished. I leave it at that point and I'll read the poem. Unfinished sketches fill my pages. Tulips undelivered lay there in a glass of water. The celebration prepared by Reem and Bob wasn't attended. The French movie started about the Danish model working in Paris and falling in love with her photographer never finished. Half a cup of coffee. Meditation departed. Books with bookmarks stacked the corners of my bedroom. Visit to the temple cut short. First measure of Mampu's Kanki and Six played, except the last two notes. Bob's photo album left unfinished on the shelf. Texts back spaced into high. A string of unfinished moments to weave an unfinished day, unfinished kisses scattered in my memory, and an unfinished poem. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Wissam. That was beautiful. How do you find the discipline to work on a book during these uncertain times? I mean, like, how do you keep your mind so willing and so, like, malleable to produce a whole work of art?
It's actually a collection. It's really more manual work at that point than a creative work. So this is a collection of poetry that I've written between 2014 and 2017. And I just didn't have the time to put it together. I think for creative work, that would be a different experience because of the background of anxiety that we're having in these times might influence really the creative work. So I wouldn't claim that we are in a state where we can produce creative work as much as we can, unless it is something that is expressive of that anxiety that we're living in or instability. I have a new series that I'm writing. I haven't really announced before. This is the first time I announce it. It's called the Corona series. So they're titled by numbers, Corona 1, Corona 2. And it is really fragments of things written that are very unreal, scattered in different, you know, news or bits and pieces or people saying things that otherwise in normal days would be very strange. And for me, I find that dynamic very poetic. So I'm, you know, I collect them and I'm making them into short poems.
I like that idea. It's interesting. Yeah, because out of context, it'll seem crazy. Everything we're doing right now to the rest of our timeline is entirely unthinkable. But I actually really like that it's so interesting how you incorporated music into your poetry. It almost makes the reader recreate the same environment that the author was in. And we so rarely get that little glimpse into the artist's state of mind while reading them. So that's very interesting. Was that basically the main idea behind it, to put you in a state of mind that you yourself was in when you wrote that poem? Because every time I open a book, even especially with poetry, and I'm reading an artist, I find myself wondering, like, is that how the writer intended it to be read? It's so hard to portray the same emotion and the same parallels that the author really wanted you to get. So adding music gets us a little closer to that.
Right. I mean, poetry is really freezing a moment of emotions just as much as photography is freezing a moment of picture or frame. Poetry is freezing of a moment of emotions. And if music was involved at that point, then and music cannot be expressed by words. And I found it to be perhaps an experimental idea to include it in the book.
Very wonderful idea. So where can everyone find your work? I know you mentioned a little bit, but just for everyone who just tuned in.
Right. So my first collection was published under the title The Opposite Swings. It's on Amazon. And then this next one is called Climbing Leaves, and it will be on Amazon also. My website is below there, wissamc.com, and it has the links to these books. Thank you, Zeina.
Awesome. And when can we expect the Corona Diaries?
I don't know.
Hopefully shortly.
Ask the World Health Organization.
Hopefully shortly. Well, thank you again, Wissam, and thank you for providing us with this venue to showcase incredible artists like yourself as well, because we both know there's a huge shortage of spaces and places like these in our community. So we are very thankful that you are one of the pioneers that actually provided this for us. So thank you again. And now, speaking of music, it's a perfect segue from Wissam to Isra Darwish. Isra is a local musician and a freshman at Wayne State University. She puts her heart in the songs she sings, and music has become the most important part of her life. She writes and composes and has been a symbol of expression and positivity. And she has a very special treat for us today in the form of two new songs. So world premiere. Take it away, Isra.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having me. This is going to be fun. Okay, so the first song that I'm going to sing, I'm just going to do like a little bit of each one because they're both still unfinished. So the first one, it's a song called Quarantine Blues. I think it's something that we can all relate to at times like this when we are literally stuck at home quarantining. You know, brings you back to like the jail time blues. Like I literally bought a harmonica. Anyways, Quarantine Blues. I hope you guys like it. When the days start to blend together and there's nothing you can do about the rainy weather, do you promise that you'll still try to get it out of bed even if you don't know why? See, I've got these quarantine blues. I let it get to me, so don't let it get to you. Oh, I'm a free spirit teen, living through my computer screen, wondering when I can finally chase my dream. Okay, so that's the part for that one. Like I said, so obviously, like, it's about being in quarantine and feeling like the weight of it being difficult to get out of bed because the days do start blending together, you know, like you wake up and you don't even know what day it is anymore. But so I'm a huge advocate for mental health as well. So this is kind of a great, the reason that I wrote it is because I think that this quarantine is a great example of people start feeling more and more like of this weight on their chest. And that's something that people with depression suffer with and wake up with every day. And so I feel like this is a great way to advocate for mental health because this is how people feel all the time. So I think, you know, that's something that we're all taking note on. Next song doesn't really fully have a name yet. I'm thinking it's going to be Pretty Things. And I'll give you a little bit of insight on it after I sing it. Close your eyes and count to 10. Maybe I'll be fine by then. Don't want to keep you up at night, so I'll pretend that I'm all right. Cover your ears and sing a song. We can pretend that nothing's wrong. We can pretend that I've always been strong, but I know real from make-believe. I'm just a girl with my heart on my sleeve, and I'll tell you pretty things as I rock you to sleep, because I never ever want you to see me drowning in the deep. I've been swimming for a while now, my hands and legs are drying out, and I don't know what to do, because I love you, but I don't love myself enough to follow through, and I know real from make. I'm just a girl with my heart on my sleeve. Okay, so that song, it has a little bit of a twist. So as like, you know, part of the song, it's close your eyes and count to 10, you know, cover your ears and sing a song. It's a lot of things that people do, like when they're children, you know, like they're happy and you're playing hide and seek and you cover your eyes and you count to 10, and it's kind of like this example of like, you know, a child covers their eyes and counts to 10, and like the people around them have to pull themselves together. It's also about mental health. I'm very into activism. I do a lot of like political activism, you know, mental health, stuff like that. So that song has like the same kind of idea. It's basically like the things that you do for the people around you, for them to believe that you're always happy and like stuff like that. You know what I mean?
So the next song, I'm actually just going to do a cover because I need to lighten the mood. When you do two sad songs, got to lighten the mood. So I have my ukulele. Okay, everyone's in their house. So if you guys are just chilling, you have no excuse not to sing along because this is a song everybody knows. Riptide. I hope you guys like it. I was scared of dentists in the dark. I was scared of pretty girls and starting conversations. Oh, all my friends are turning green. You're the magician's assistant in their dreams. Oh.
Was that the last song to chat?
Yeah.
Okay. That's well, my gosh, you have a beautiful voice. Yeah, what a way to end.
Thank you so much.
So fun to sing along and dance. I love your style. Yeah, absolutely. I say I love your style. It's so different and a breath of fresh air. I love the quarantine blues. I mean, like, look at how this pandemic has inspired everyone to produce all these works of art, like, right on theme, right? Absolutely inspiring how humans find a way to just keep going. I mean, look at you composing and writing these wonderful songs. So tell us a bit about your background and how you came to making music. And are you studying it at Wayne State? So tell us a little bit about your story.
So I'm a freshman at Wayne State University. I'm actually a public relations and creative writing major. So creative writing obviously helps me with music. I'm actually a poet. That's kind of when I started writing my lyrics was I started a poetry club in my high school. Like I was just super into it. And so it kind of like drove me to a point where I'm like, okay, I need to do something in creative writing. Like I need to find a way. Basically, like I said about the mental health advocacy from a young age, I'm very open about talking about it. When I was pretty young, I started like, you know, I was like, this isn't normal. And so I also grew up playing trumpet. I've played trumpet all my life since fifth grade. So I was in music. And so music was something that taught me about empathy. When I started struggling, I kind of detached from everything in my life. I saved up, I bought my first guitar, I learned my first two chords, and I wrote my first song. And ever since then, like, I can't set my guitar down anywhere I go. I need it to be, like, with me or close to me. So music changed my life. And I love this thing that you guys are doing, because I think that in the community, it's really stigmatized. So is mental health. So, you know, a lot of things are, but I think it's really amazing to have something where, like, a Muslim girl, you know, can proudly play her guitar and sing her songs. So thank you guys.
Absolutely. And thank you for having, you know, the courage and happiness and openness to actually share your songs and share your writings and share this very special gift with us. And yes, you're right. I mean, if we all have one thing in common, everything that we do here is basically in our culture specifically, it's all a little bit difficult, a little bit stigmatized, like you said, whether it be, you know, following your passion in art, whether it be singing or acting or writing poetry or, you know, even visual arts and of course, mental health. We all come at a, you know, a meeting point in these difficult, very difficult issues and exceedingly needed windows and openings for us to express our feelings and come to the forefront and say that, you know what, let's stop lying to ourselves and let's really start discussing these things, whether in the form of speech or art or dialogue. Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much for doing that. Where can we find your songs?
So I have music on all platforms. So Spotify, Apple Music, everything. If you search my first name, it'll come up. And then Instagram, I post almost every day. I post singing a cover or part of an original song, stuff like that. So Instagram is like the go-to for keeping up with the life of Israel.
That's awesome. And you're a multi-instrumentalist. How many instruments do you play?
So like I said, I grew up playing trumpet. And then because of like the music theory that I learned through playing that, you know, I got like super, super involved. I was a drum major and stuff at my high school. So I picked up guitar, picked up keyboard. I have my ukulele. So 1, 2, 3, 4. And I just bought a harmonica. So you can't consider that nice. Yet, but maybe one day.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing with us tonight, and thank you for performing. And we would love to have you again, of course, anytime. Artists like you is why these venues were created in the first place. So thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, you have a good night.
Thanks. Okay, we're going to carry on with our open mic portion. And one of our participants is Bayan Funas. She is an educator and poet in Detroit as well. She is the founder of Writing for Freedom LLC, which empowers individuals, particularly youth of color, to share their narratives through written, spoken, and visual art to inspire change in their communities and the world. Isn't that amazing? That's exactly what we want to do. Her first collection of poetry, Diary of a Daughter in Diaspora, the book is called Diary of a Daughter in Diaspora in 2018, is available on Amazon. So follow her on Instagram and Twitter at That Algerian and Facebook at Bayan the Poet, or her website, www.bayanfunas.com. So without further ado, Bayan.
Okay, I'm not Bayan. So since we ran out of time and Bayan wasn't, probably she had some technical difficulties. So you will, that is a promo for our next show. And
there you go.
We are done with the lineup, Zaina.
Thank you. Oh, okay. Well, that brings us then to the conclusion of our first virtual Dearborn Open Mic. Thank you so much for everyone for joining in, and thank you all for our wonderful artists that participated tonight. If you would like to participate in the next Dearborn Open Mic, please read the scroll and fill out the participation form. We really look forward to showcasing all the new talents in our community, especially during these difficult times where we really, really need to come together as a wonderful and supportive community, especially to rally around the art, as we can now know exceedingly how important art is, especially in times like these. You feel people magnate, you know, towards art. So I want to thank you again for joining us. This concludes our first virtual Dearborn Open Mic, and we hope to continue with it. And I hope you enjoyed it. And join us next time. You will see the little ads that we will put out, so you could join our broadcast or join as a participant. And please stay safe and hug your loved ones tightly tonight. We love you. Thank you for this community. Thank you, Wissam, for providing this platform again. And we hope to see you on the other side physically someday again. shortly soon, hopefully. Thank you all.